Good morning, maggots. It's System Mastery, the podcast where we stick it to the Nazis 1d6 damage at a time. Now drop and give me 20. This week, we're going to take in a little book learning in the form of Gear Krieg, a World War II pulp soldier adventure sort of game. Now drop and give me... Oh, hang on. I think I might have told you to give me 20 already. Did I also call you maggots? Shoot, I am running low on drill sergeant stuff. I bet you could suck a golf ball through a garden hose on today's System Mastery.
John, are you sure you want to record the podcast today? Are you sure you don't want to just watch the Land of Confusion video?
I'm almost certain that I would rather do the podcast, but I'm not 100%.
Well, I don't know if anyone's going to give us any Patreon money for watching the Genesis video over and over again.
I mean, we could always start a live stream of us watching Genesis's Land of Confusion over and over again.
Oh, yeah. We could totally, like, Twitch that, right? We could just put it on a loop on the YouTube and just, like, talk over it.
Yeah, we'd just sit there and people would watch us watching it, and then
we wouldn't even talk.
No, by the time it got to like hour number 10 or something of us just continually watching that, people would turn in just to be like, "All right, how insane are they?"
Oh yeah, I guess we could do that. It could be like what was that thing that the Twitch Plays Pokemon that was going on for a while? You remember that?
Where, yeah, I do remember that.
Well, it could be like that, except that no matter what commands people put in, we just start that video again.
Yeah, no matter what you say, it's us watching Land of Confusion, so it's actually nothing like Twitch Plays Pokemon.
No, it's exactly like it. There's a whole chaos versus order model where...
And none of it matters, yeah, because we're just watching Land of Confusion.
And then, like, chaos wins. They vote that we press up, even though it makes no sense to press up, and it slightly turns up the volume of Land of Confusion.
Except it doesn't. We just watch Land of Confusion.
Well, it can control the volume. Also, they can make us watch it faster or slower.
We don't have the ability to do that. We're just on YouTube.
YouTube can do that.
YouTube can't do anything. YouTube is useless.
Well, no. First of all, it's not useless. It can play the Genesis Land of Confusion video.
You know, we should probably talk about a game.
So, the game I'm proposing is, how long can you watch Genesis Land of Confusion?
Once.
The video that's a bunch of puppets from, like, the UK in the early 80s. And Ronald Reagan saying, "Goody two shoes, Betty by Bo's time again," which I know very well because I just finished watching the video for about 4 straight hours.
Yeah.
I'm Jeff.
This is garbage.
We're using every minute of this, John. Every part of the buffalo. Every minute of Land of Confusion.
Yeah.
So this is System Mastery, the podcast where we review old role-playing games as far as you know.
Well, I mean, not as far as you know if this is your first episode.
Okay, let me try that again. This is the world we live in.
So
I'm Jeff, that's John. Hi.
So we read Gear Krieg. Gear Krieg is an RPG that is also an offshoot minis combat game. So the minis combat game is all set in World War II. That is sort of different in a way that is very minor. Basically, it's that...
There's walkers.
There's walkers. There's like some AT-STs walking around. And also, Tesla had ideas that actually worked.
This really... It's amazing. I mean, we'll get into the rules of this game at some point, I'm sure, but... Mostly, the thing about Gear Krieg that's worth discussing is what's not in the book.
It is, so it starts out and it's telling you that, like, this is a pulp adventure game.
Mm-hmm.
What this book really wants to be is, like, an Indiana Jones style, like, two-fisted adventure type thing.
Yeah,
set during World War II.
You dive into action with your gun maul on your arm, and then you punch out a Nazi who's different from the other Nazis because he's not part of their command structure, and instead he's looking for amulets.
Well, I mean, the whole thing is like, you're some two-fisted soldier, and you've got, like, your plucky sidekick and a weird inventor, and you're going against, like...
A bad-hearted woman and...
Some femme fatale and a scientist that's trying to create Frankenstein monsters.
Yeah, and some ancient Chinese secret-style villain who's all racist, but not really.
Super racist.
Kinda racist. So, that's the idea. Oh, and also Edison and Tesla, which get used to that, because anytime they want to explain any super science of any kind in this book, they just say, thanks to the advances of scientists like Edison and Tesla.
Yeah, that's it. It's just Edison and Tesla all the way down.
They can't think of any other scientists, which is a little weird to me.
Well, they can't think of any other scientists, and they can't think of any way to use those guys in an interesting fashion.
No, it's just anytime they're like, hover technology, Edison and Tesla. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. And the big problem with that is you'd think, oh, there's super science. Like, you're doing a pulp thing, so, you know, there's probably going to be doomsday weapons and scientists that are creating crazy nonsense, but it's really not. Outside of the walkers, there's basically nothing in this.
There's one thing which I found surprising when I was reading through it, because I was just reading through the whole, like, first 35 to 40 pages of this book is just the weird history of the weird World War II world of Gear Krieg. And it's just the exact same shit that happened in World War II, with one minor exception. Edison and Tesla are important. I'm sorry, guys. Here's three. I'll give you three. Edison and Tesla are still important. The Maginot Line is a line of death lasers instead of a line of soldiers.
I mean, it's both. They're like, oh, we've got like this big heavy defense line. Also a Tesla cannon.
And what was the other one? Oh, yeah. There's walkers.
Yeah, and walkers in this are the same thing that, like, furries are to furry pirates, in that
they're not really there.
Nothing has changed in the timeline. Like, everything happens on the same dates, the same way it happened in real life. It's just, also occasionally they'll be like, oh, and Japan has a walker. Anyway.
It doesn't appear to change much of anything about warfare. They just sort of take the place of infantry in some stories.
Yeah, the walkers themselves, they're like, oh, they go where tanks can't, so these walkers will show up in, like, a jungle, or they'll go over debris.
Okay, how are they doing that, though? Like, I guess they're just smashing through trees, because otherwise they're huge. They're unbelievably huge, so they can't just wander around in jungles.
No, I'm like, the whole point that a tank can't just go around in a jungle is because it's super wide, but so is a walker. I don't understand why you're saying
this. Yeah, you know what would be really good at going through a jungle if it needed to is a tank. The only reason they didn't is because they were too heavy to get on the boats. But here we are with unbelievably super heavy giant walkers, which I guess can do that. And then the same thing with the Battle of Britain, where they were like, well, there's a lot of debris on the ground, so walkers are useful because they can pick their way over the debris.
Yeah.
You know what's really good at pushing its way through debris? Tanks.
You know what's great? Treads. They go over stuff.
You know what's complicated? Building working robo legs. But don't worry, Edison and Tesla. Edison and Tesla is like listening to people in Hollywood say thoughts and prayers. Like in this book, every once in a while. Anyway, there's lasers. Edison and Tesla. Edison and Tesla. It's mind-boggling to me that they never were like, you know, also, I don't know, Alan Turing, Albert Einstein.
Nope, nothing.
Just Edison and Tesla. And you know what? I'll say it. I'm fucking sick of Tesla. Nikola Tesla can suck a goddamn dick. He didn't do anything. He never really did anything. He said he had death lasers, but then he said that no one was willing to pay for them, so he wouldn't show them to anybody. He was a big nobody hiding a bunch of nothing behind his back, and then David Bowie played him in that one movie, and then the Oatmeal made a comic about him, and all of a sudden everyone's lining up to get his dick in their mouth.
Oh, but how do you really feel, Jeff?
I'm sick of Tesla. Edison was a big fucking asshole, but at least he invented shit.
Well,
kind of.
Yeah.
Tesla was a charlatan. Everyone should just get used to it.
but in this book, his death laser thing actually works. Good for him.
Sure, why not? So, basically, it's supposed to be a pulp adventure in that you're outside the chain of World War II command.
Yeah, so, you're some guy.
Yeah, you're just some guy. You're ranging your way around the world and punching Nazis and discovering secrets.
Fighting around the world.
Getting drunk. Mostly it's pulp in that you don't have to report to a guy at the end of the day or the beginning of the day.
Yeah, it's mostly that instead of being like the main Gear Krieg minis game feels like it's much more like, oh, this is actually like regiments and combat and whatnot, but this is like, no, you're just some dude who's having adventures.
Actually, you know what it is, John? I don't even think Tesla's that bad. I think I just disagree with everything the oatmeal says.
I think you're just angry at people liking things, Jeff.
No, well, okay.
I'm pretty sure once the internet likes something, you hate it.
I know you've been pushing this Jeff is a nihilist thing recently, and it's weirding me out to no end. But no, I just don't like the oatmeal very much. I mean, let's face it, Exploding Kittens is a bad card game.
Oh, it's an awful card game. It's basically like playing War, except you have kittens on there.
Yeah, also, running is shit, and he has a whole comic about how good that is. Sriracha, not as good as everyone's making it out to be. It's just sauce bacon. I don't care. There's better sauces than Sriracha. So, all right, enough. That's my opinion on Gear Krieg, is fuck the oatmeal.
My opinion on Gear Krieg is these damn kids won't get off my internet.
Hey, I'm down with the modern youth of today.
No, you're not.
I'll read a meme or whatever they are.
Yeah, going on YouTube so you can fucking watch an old ass Genesis video.
Hey, that's a great idea. You want to watch Land of Confusion real quick, John?
The kids these days, they're going on the YouTube to get the freshest news.
I'll tell you who's doing that right now is a whole bunch of our listeners are pausing this to go listen to Land of Confusion instead.
I'm gonna bet you none of them are doing that.
We'll find out in the comments, won't we?
Oh, well, now that I said none of them are doing that, someone's gonna just to spite me, oh, pause and go do it.
Because you have to be the tastemaker, you huge
oh,
douche.
Oh, yeah. You're the one who hates everything that's new. I'm the one who introduces things to people.
Yeah, so basically, while I'm the one who likes Genesis Land of Confusion, you're the one who likes Disturbed Land of Confusion.
I like both. You see, I'm down with the kids.
Where I am merely down with the sickness.
Ooh-ah.
I'm trying to say that in a depressing way. I'm down with the sickness.
Oh, guys, I've got some bad news. I've come down with the sickness.
Your mother, get up. Come on. Get down with the sickness.
So the rules for Gear Krieg.
Oh, really?
Everything's D6 based.
Yeah, okay. It starts by saying that it's using an engine called the Silhouette System, which it describes as tried and proven.
Which is the same system, apparently, that they use for the Minis game.
Let's talk about that real quick, because it keeps saying, they give you the code number for their Minis game.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're like, this uses the same rules as our Gear Krieg, the Miniatures Tactical Combat Role-Playing Game, DPL 705. Also, the Airplane Game, DPL 707. And I'm like, the Airplane Game? Does it have a name? Every time they refer to it in the book, it's just the Airplane Game.
Well, yeah. It's the Airplane Game.
It's not capitalized. Is it the Airplane Game by E.E. Cummings?
No, man. It's like when kids are playing games, and they're like, what were you guys playing? We were playing He-Man's. And they're like, what were you playing? The Airplane Game?
We're having a rainbow party. See, I know what youth do, John.
Ugh.
See? They do like a lipstick blowjobs or something, right?
Yeah, what you know about the youth is what the Fox News feeds you.
Look, all I'm saying is that if you see someone flashing their headlights at you late at night,
it's obviously a gang member.
I thought it was like there's a guy with a hook hand in the back seat.
See the your aunt forward email is that if you see someone and their headlights are off and you flash it at them, then they're going to kill you because it's a gang initiation thing.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, okay, I'm up to speed with that. And that means that they are either in the Sharks or the Jets, the most modern of all gangs.
Yes.
Is that accurate?
Yeah, totally true.
Oh, I'm going to lean into this old man thing.
I'm going to keep attempting to actually review a book while you steer it as far away as possible.
But the book was boring.
Well, you're boring.
That's
get fucked.
Not true. That's the one thing about me I can conclusively say isn't true based on years of experience. I'm capricious and whimsical at best.
Yes, you're truly a modern fairy tale.
I'm just a sprite, John. I just bounce from story to story.
You're some kind of bogan.
Call me Puck, for I shall give you a Midsummer Night's Dream.
This game uses only D6.
Nice try. Yeah, okay, so here's the basic mechanic. You roll a D6 for each point you have in some stat or something.
Yeah, if you're rolling for just stats, like if it's a strength test or whatever, you roll 2D6.
Yeah, and if you're rolling with a skill, for example, like if you're like, instead of just I'm making a strength test to push this door over, it's I'm attempting to lockpick this door, then you're rolling 3D6.
Well, you're rolling whatever your skill is.
Thank you, sorry. So the way that this works is no matter how many dice you roll, you only count the highest value on any individual die you roll. If you roll more than 1 6, then you get +1 216 for each other six you roll. So, for example, if you roll two sixes, your total value is a seven.
Yeah. There are some variations in the rules. You can play a like gritty, realist version of the game. You can play the standard pulp version of the game, or you can play the like super heroics version of the game. In the gritty realism one, I think you don't even get bonuses. It's just you take the highest die. The adding an additional plus one per six is the normal. And then the super heroic, you do it on fives or sixes.
That is correct, yeah. It's interesting how much it kind of relies on that gritty reality version of the game, which is sort of a bummer because it's supposed to be kind of, you know, the pulp setting. Granted, it does say that the pulp setting is the default.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're like, we've got the three, and you can either tone it down and be like, ah, we're doing horrible war stuff, or you can tone it up and be like, yeah, my dude straight up just, like, shoots a bomb and rides it into battle or some crap.
So stats in this game range from basically positive three to negative three, with positive being better than negative, and they either add or subtract to your final D6 total result.
Yeah, your stats and everything, all the skills, all that is all point buy.
Mm-hmm.
And you can, I mean, technically you can get up to like a plus five or plus six, but it is just way too expensive points-wise. Like, you'd end up being like, oh, I spent all of my points and have a plus four.
Yeah. So there are 10 basic stats in the game, which is probably about four too many.
Nah.
But here's what they are. You've got agility, appearance, build, fitness, knowledge, creativity, influence, perception, psyche, and willpower. And those last two are kind of special and important and different.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about the point buy is your standard spend a 0 points on a stat is negative one.
Yes, yeah.
So, I mean, it's only 1 point out of your point buy in order to raise it to a zero.
So, yeah.
And everything is scaling costs. So yeah. It'll be like, oh, it's 1 point to go to zero, but then by the time you want to be like, oh, I want a plus four, it's like, this is 30-something points.
So a standard character has 30 points to start with. Like in the pulp version of the game, a standard person has 30 points of stat. To get a negative one costs 0 points. To get a one costs 1 point.
You mean a zero.
To get a zero costs 1 point. To get a plus one costs 4 points. And then plus two is nine, plus three is 16, plus four is 25. Plus five is 36, which is way more than you start with, so you won't have that.
Well, yeah, you'd have to go into their merits and flaws and end up getting some flaws just to get a plus five in something.
Yeah.
Now, you can go lower to get points as well in your stats. So if you're like, oh, I'll get a negative two or a negative three in something, you can get a few points as well.
But you don't get as many. You get less points for taking a negative than you get for accepting a positive. So, for example, if you take a negative five to one of your stats, a positive 5 would cost you 36 points. A negative 5 will grant you 14.
Yeah, it's not a very good investment. If you only needed like a couple points and you went down to a negative 2, maybe, but otherwise it's just not worth it.
A negative 2 gets you 1 point.
Yeah. It's
never worth it.
No, and the fact that you're rolling and just subtracting that from whatever you roll, and the standard difficulty for stuff is usually around like a three or a four for something that's, you know, not super difficult to do. But then most of the stuff that you'd want to do is at least like a seven. You're like, oh, unless I have a bonus to whatever I'm doing, I'm not going to do it.
Yes. It's hard to work out the exact averages in this game, but let's say that you want to do a simple thing, like climb a ladder. That's a difficulty three. Difficulty three means that on two dice, you should get it. You have about a 50-50 chance there. Of getting it, because that's the average die result.
You know, assuming you're at a plus zero.
At a
whatever.
Plus zero, yeah. It starts getting, if you have a plus two, then you can't fail at that.
Yeah.
But since they take that into account, and most things in this game are difficulty seven or higher, you need to at least roll 1 6 or have a really high stat bonus.
Yeah, it's one of the things where I was going through looking at the difficulty chart and how you do stuff, and I was like, you know, I would basically run this as the super heroic one because it gives you more points to spend. You get your bonuses on fives or sixes. And at that point, I'm like, okay, you can basically run a game that's useful at that point. But all the stuff from the standard pulp and especially the gritty realism one It's just like, man, you do not succeed at anything.
That's gritty realism, though, John. You know how soldiers in the actual World War II were constantly comically falling off ladders and bonking each other on the head?
Oh, yeah. They'd try to shoot a gun and just shoot it into the air and do nothing.
Yeah. I hate when that shit comes up. They're like, it's gritty realism. No, it isn't.
Gritty realism isn't everyone is incompetent.
Yeah, gritty realism isn't fucking Keystone Cops. Which, incidentally, all the NPCs in the world are fucking Keystone Cops. Because your average NPC has, 10 points to spend on their stats.
Well, yeah, your average human, like you're walking around a dude, like I'm a shopkeep, is 10 points.
Well, that means your average soldier is. So, like, it's World War II, so most conscripts, most of the guys in your army are just like, I worked in a grocery store.
Well, yeah, most of them are, what are you? I'm a plus zero at everything.
Yeah. Which means that they fail at everything all the time.
Yeah. They're just bad.
It's just weird. How is the army accomplishing? Oh, right, Edison and Tesla.
Well, they're accomplishing things because the other side is also that.
it's just two lines line up and miss each other for years at a time.
It's just a giant comedy of errors until someone gets a good roll.
So psyche is an abstract measure of the character's karma, happiness, sensitivity, and love of life.
Yeah, they don't quite do, like, everything is based on charisma for stuff, because psyche is different from their charisma, which is
different from willpower.
Yeah, all of their, like, what is your personality like? So you could be like, oh, yeah, I've got a high willpower, but I'm a dour, angry guy. And, you know, I have a high charisma, but nobody likes me. But my charisma means they follow my orders. So you're like, the shitty drill sergeant would be a high charisma, low psyche type character.
Yeah. Yeah, so psyche and will come up a lot in like mental roles, like to resist torture and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So those are just a couple of additional stats. Basically, there's a whole sidebar in here on how to use psyche, because even the book doesn't feel like it adequately explained what psyche is.
Yeah, because they already have charisma and willpower, the book had to go, okay, we have to tell you that charisma only means how good you are at getting people to do what you say. Psyche is basically your personality.
Yeah. So after you finish with those stats, then you have to pick out some skills for your character.
Yep. Also point buy for that.
Yep. Different point values, different point costs, different point starting totals.
It's all the scaling points for how much of a bonus you want to any skill.
Yep. So for example, a two skill bonus or a two skill level to a stat will cost you 4 points. Specializations cost you 1 point each, and specializations are what they are in any other game.
Oh, no. Specializations are expensive, actually.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. They're more expensive, because the idea is that you don't take them until you've mastered the skill.
Yeah, because they cost, I think, 5 or 6, and it ends up being that you don't want to get it until you've been level 3 in a skill, or else it's just not worth it.
Yes, you're absolutely right. So basically the way that works is you're like, I took my melee skill up to rank 3. And then it starts getting more expensive for me to buy ranks in melee, but it's cheaper for me to just buy ranks in specialization, sword.
Yeah. So if you're a guy who's like, I'm a sharpshooter, then you can get the handheld like gun skill, and then eventually just go specialization into like rifle.
That actually happens as soon as you hit skill level 2, because to get from skill level 2 to 3 is 9 points.
Eh.
So at skill level 2, you're better off buying specialization dots. And not worrying about weapons that aren't your weapon of choice or whatever.
It's 9 total to get to 3.
I see. I thought it was actually 9 points to get to 3.
No, that's where in your starting character creation.
You're absolutely right. You've got me there. So this book actually has a seduction skill that passes the test.
It does indeed.
That's a rare thing. Usually books either fail the test or they just kind of circumnavigate it by not having seduction at all.
Yeah.
But this one actually has a seduction rule that's like, this is used for getting people out of what you want out of people through sexual wiles.
Yep.
And that's all it is. That's all it says, which is exactly what you'd want it to say. That's the right way to do it.
Yeah, it's just, this is what seduction means. We don't need to do anything else with it.
It even gives you the option of a specialization of sex of your choice.
Yeah.
It was like, hey, you want to seduce dudes? You can specialize in dudes.
You could just be all about dudes.
Yeah, you know all the tricks for seducing dudes.
You're like, hey, dude, it's a little wild and a little strange.
I like to see the true master of seducing dudes, and he's just like, offer to touch their penis.
Yeah, you walk up, hey, bro, penis touchins? That's my name, Dr. Penis Touchins.
That's all. Like, just climb up a mountain to find this guru of seducing men.
What teach is the- me. Teach me, guru of the mountain. How do I seduce men?
Offer to get their penis wet.
Ah, I see. Such wisdom.
That will be $5.
$5 foot longs.
That will be a $5 foot long.
I'm so hungry. I need to eat fresh.
I also accept plays of the Land of Confusion video by Genesis.
Of course he does. Because he's so old.
No, I'm leaning into it now. You can't insult me for being old anymore.
So, in addition to getting your skills and stats, like we mentioned, there is a merits and flaws system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, God, is there ever. It's a very boring one. It's not especially bad or good. It's just there.
No, it is. I don't particularly enjoy this one because there wasn't anything goofy to be like, haha, I can't believe they put that in there. But there was nothing that was especially like, oh, man, I can't wait to spend my hard-earned points on this. Because it's mostly just like, oh, I've got a bonus to, like, being able to see something, maybe.
It just adds to the overall sense that reviewing this book is like trying to review Safeway vanilla ice cream. When you're just like, did you need some cheap ice cream that you could put in front of a kid and they'll eat it? Safeway vanilla ice cream. We're the bee of ice creams. That's what this book is. There's nothing. They didn't make any huge errors.
No.
But they also didn't do anything interesting.
They didn't really take any risks.
Yeah.
I'd say one of the weirder, more interesting things that they did in this is the HP system, as it's a wound system that is based on a derived stat.
Mm-hmm.
And the derived stat tells you essentially how much damage you need to take in any given time to take a certain level of wound.
And there are a lot of derived stats.
Oh, yeah. But the I forget what it's called, because it's like your stamina plus whatever plus something.
Oh, yeah. You're thinking of, you're trying to come up to your three wound values, because there's flesh wounds, deep wounds, and fatal wounds.
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to remember what the actual name of your derived value is, but half of that value is a flesh wound. The full number of that value is your regular wound. And then the horrible crippling wound is double that. If you go past double, you end up just dying instantly, which is unfortunate.
So I have the section in front of me here for secondary trait formulas, which I thought might be fun to go through because
because
the formulas are a little on the convoluted side.
Yeah.
And there was no way we were going to remember these off the top of our head.
No.
So there are a lot of these, actually. There's strength, health, stamina, unarmed damage, armed damage, flesh wounding score, deep wounding score, deep hurting score.
Deep hurting.
I'm kidding. That one's not real, but I wanted John to do a Mystery Science Theater joke because he's also super old. So anyway, the relevant ones of these are strength is build plus fitness divided by 2, round toad 0. Health is fitness plus psyche plus willpower divided by 3, round off. Now, keep in mind that because it's possible for all three of those scores to be negative.
Yeah, there's the ability to have the derived stats be real bad if you just ignored or lowered a lot of the stats that go into certain things.
Like, for example, if you have a fitness of -1, a psyche of 0, and a willpower of -3, then your eventual result is going to be -4 divided by 3, round off.
Yeah.
I don't even want to remember how to do dividing by a negative, or dividing a negative by a positive right now. I'm not in fourth grade anymore. I'll pass. My calculator app's in my pocket, so no, I don't care.
The derived stats all have their own weird little, like, these are the stats you need, and sometimes you're, adding a bunch and then rounding off. Sometimes you multiply. Sometimes you divide. Sometimes you add it to a static number.
Yeah, sometimes you're haunted by 1,000 screams.
Sometimes.
That's my theme for the day, John. I don't know if you noticed yet, but it's just Land of Confusion jokes.
Yeah, I'm glad. I'm glad that that's our theme.
It could have been World War II stuff or something, but nah.
Nah.
All right, so the more interesting ones, like when you start getting the complicated stamina, 5 plus, open parentheses, build plus health, close parentheses, plus 25, minimum 10.
Yeah. The ability to do that is where all your wound values come from. So they needed it to be a minimum number, because if you were just negative on everything and you're like, oh, what's your wound value? It's like 2. If someone flicks me with their finger, I could have a lethal wound.
So they had to give you that minimum. The same thing for damage and unarmed damage are both long calculations with minimums. And then we finally get to those wounding scores we were talking about earlier. The wounding score for a flesh wound is half your stamina rounded up.
Yep, that's what I was saying before.
Yeah, so again, stamina has at least a minimum of 10, but for most characters in this game, it's going to be something between like 10 and 25.
Like the average should be about 25 to 30.
Yeah, so let's just say 25, which gives you a flesh wounding score rounded up of about 13. Right?
Yeah.
A wound score is equivalent to your stamina, so somewhere between 25 and 30 for your average rough-and-tumble adventure hero.
Yep.
And the instant death score is twice your stamina, or about 50-ish, is what we're going to say. Yep. Somewhere between 50 and 60.
Yep.
So what happens here is if you take damage, you check to see if it sets off any one of those, and it only sets off one. Whichever the highest one it clears is, you earn that wound.
Yeah, so if I take, like, 17 damage... I went past the minor wound, went into the regular wound, but I don't take a minor and a regular. I just take whatever the highest is.
Yes, and that's going to provide you with some stat penalties, the inability to run, and kind of progressive penalties to everything, which means that you quickly, once you start taking wounds, you quickly succumb to your own wounds.
Yeah, you just get all of these stacking penalties, a bunch of nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
They do say that because this is a pulp adventure thing, that surrender should be an option, like they'll take you captive or do stuff like that.
The one thing that's funny to me, and it's something that will not take surrenders, is the degree of lethality of falling in this game is immense.
There are actually several things in this game that are really oddly lethal. I mean, there's some that you'd go, okay, I guess you're going for a gritty realism on the lethality here, mm-hmm. like... poison. They have in the section talking about poison, it's a multiply by a base score depending on how the roll goes.
Yeah.
And they're the one that they give the example of is like, oh, someone put one dose of this poison in someone's tea. The damage it would deal is 115. And you're like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So falling does, it's a double multiplier system. You take the number of meters that you fall. You roll that many dice, and then you multiply that result by the number of meters that you fall. So, for example, let's say the average character were to fall 5 meters, which, you know, if you're having trouble with the American conversion rate, that's less than 20 feet. So it's like falling off your house. The damage it does is equivalent to 5d6 times 5.
Well, I think it's taking just the highest like everything else, right?
No, it's number, it's amount, it's damage dice dealt. So you're taking them all.
Is it?
Yeah, that's the example that they give you.
Wow.
So what that means is that the average person who falls off their house takes, and we'll just do averages here, 5d6, the average of that is 15, times 5 is 75.
Yeah.
It's and like we were saying earlier, your good pulp hero, a good pulp hero, should have a fatal immediately death score between 50 and 60.
Yeah. Falling off of your roof is basically fatal to everyone.
It will explode you unless you are a robot or for some reason if you're wearing heavy armor.
Yeah, the armor in this ends up making it so that you just add on to your score.
Yeah.
So you end up having things like, oh, I'm wearing heavy armor, which gives me an extra like 40 points to my stamina score. So now all of a sudden, if I get poisoned or I fall off a roof, it doesn't matter.
I think poison, it specifically says that the armor doesn't really help.
I know, but I think it's funny.
But it doesn't say anything about that with falling damage, which means that if you fall off your house, you are definitely going to explode unless you're wearing plate mail, which for some reason, this game, again, a pulp fiction adventure set in World War II, when it gets to the armor set, it's like leather armor, scale mail.
Oh, yeah. It has modern armor and it's better.
Yeah.
Than wearing the old ones, but it's like, you can wear plate mail, like an old-fashioned knight would. And I'm like, what?
I guess because you might get into a fight in a museum or something.
Like, maybe you go into some, like, Kraut's mansion and you hide in a suit of armor.
And then he comes running past and you just point in the direction you want him to think you went. And he's like, thank you. And you're like, And then all of a sudden, you're running around in a hallway, and you keep popping through all the doors.
Yeah, and someone's looking through the eye holes of a painting, and it's real weird.
Yummy, 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 I've got love in my tummy, is playing the whole time.
Yeah.
It's great. It's real pulpy.
Super pulp.
So, anyway, there are a few things where it's clear that they didn't quite... I mean, for a tested, tried-and-true, proven system of role-playing rules designed to get out of your way, because that's how this book opens up with its rules section, they have a lot of things where it's like, oops, this is always fatal.
Yeah, basically it's everything that you wouldn't find in the miniatures game, because no one's like, oh, I'm using a, like, snake poison in your tea in this, like, army combat simulator.
True.
So all of the stuff that's, like, falling damage or... poison or like fire damage, stuff like that. Like explosions are way less lethal than basically all of the weird stuff.
Yes. I don't understand though. Poison tea shows up a lot in Untitled Airplane Combat game, John.
Airplane combat. You know, I'm a British character and I'm flying in my airplane and drinking tea.
It's a Gloucester airplane. That's the name of it.
Yeah, and the Kaiser has poisoned it. Wait a minute, I went to the wrong war.
The Kaiser? The zombie Kaiser has poisoned it.
Yeah, that zombie Kaiser. Actually, well, obviously some super science guys
rezzed
the Kaiser.
Zombie Kaiser would make a pretty great World War II villain. Like, for
yeah,
a pulp
if you
story.
Were doing a pulp story that had zombie Kaiser and it was, you know, you had one of those German Frankenstein doctors.
What if it was German Frankenstein's Kaiser? That's what it was.
What if it was
Wilhelm Smash?
What if it was Frankenstein's Kaiser's monster?
Frankenstein's Kaiser's monster. Well, I think that was Archduke Ferdinand.
I think that was the Balkans.
I think Gavrilo Princip was the true Archduke's Kaiser's monster, John.
No. Frankenstein's Kaiser's monster is definitely the Balkans.
The Balkans.
The whole Balkans.
Oh, boy. It's not just economic conditions in rural Germany.
It's not just.
It's also that. World War I was complicated, and no one wants to talk about
Guys,
it.
Guys, World War I was real weird.
World War I was more or less inevitable. It was a series of a variety of forces.
Also, World War I was basically the equivalence of like a bar fight that breaks out and then everyone joins in.
Yeah, World War I is a complicated thing that thankfully World War II came along and gave us like very clear, obvious bad guys.
Yeah, it was like, oh, what's going on here? These guys are bad and they're attacking these guys. Okay.
Yeah, these guys are burning Jewish people alive for sport. Oh, those are very clearly bad guys. Everyone in the world can agree.
Yeah, but when you read the World War I history, you're like, man, I don't even know whose side to be on. What the fuck is going on here?
Everybody's the bad guy in World War I.
Jeez.
That's why all the good pulp fiction adventures are set in World War II.
Yeah, because if you were a World War I pulp fiction adventure, you'd be like, I'm probably in Africa.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Indiana Jones, the first one, is set in, like, 1926. So, like, right after World War I.
Yeah.
Because, if I remember correctly, the first Indiana Jones, chronologically, is Temple of Doom.
Well, chronologically.
Chronologically, Temple of Doom. They have to make it the first one so that they can explain why Willie goes away and never comes back and never will and no one talks about her.
Yep.
It's weird that no one talks about her in later ones.
Yeah.
You know, and Marcus never is like, oh, Indy, I'm glad to see you. Where's that annoying blonde woman that everyone hated?
Yep. Nope. No siree.
All right. So, gosh, is that the whole...
There's more.
Gear.
So there's a whole section on, you know, these are the guns you have and your unarmed damage and your armed damage all just adds on to whatever you're shooting or stabbing or punching or whatever. But they have a very small section that is like your vehicles.
Yeah.
So it gives you like this is a limousine.
There are six kinds of car.
Yeah. It gives you a bunch of cars. It gives you some tanks. And then you get your walkers.
Because you've been wondering about this the whole time, right? Because we kept mentioning that the only thing about this game that demarcates it from World War II, besides, you know, Tesla and Edison, is these walkers, these AT-STs that everyone seems to have.
Yep.
Well, there are stats in the book for them, for three of them. They are so big and strong that they are not really interactable with a party that is not also in a walker.
Well, the whole thing with them is it's like, this isn't really something you would do anything with in a pulp adventure where it was just a couple of guys.
Yeah.
Unless that was your big set piece is you've got to run around some area and find a way to stop this walker.
The problem is that their stats are largely irrelevant. When you get right down to it, the huge heap of guns they're carrying, their crazy amount of armor value, their huge numbers of wounds they can take before they fall down, the searchlights and everything on them. All of that's irrelevant because they're just scenery.
Oh, yeah.
That's the only way you could really interact with them. Unless your team is in one and fighting another one, there's no reason to have stats for them. It should just be, it would always just be, all right, you guys are in this walker. What do you want to do? We want to mow down that horde of Nazis. All right, you do. You have a million machine guns. They flee and many of them explode.
Well, the game itself is like talking about how to do pulp adventures, whatever. And then it gets to a point where it says, hey, if there's ever a time where you're using like a whole squadron of dudes or you've got walkers versus tanks or something like that, just play the minis game.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because that is a disappointment.
Yeah, I know that a lot of times they'll want to do that. You know, you look at an Iron Kingdoms, and it's like, hey, man, if you really want to, you can basically just run this the same way you would the tabletop game.
Iron Kingdoms works because it works in the opposite direction. Iron Kingdoms worked because it was like, hey, do you want to bring in stuff from the tabletop game? The stats are the same. You can put them in, and their balance level is roughly the same.
Well, yeah, and that's what I'm saying is, you can look at something like Iron Kingdoms and go, well, it's also trying to use the minis and whatnot from the game, except it doesn't disrupt the game in any way. This is like, stop playing the game you're playing, play a different game, come back to this game.
Would you like to use the actual walkers, the core of this setting, and the reason why things are doing, why this setting even exists? Okay, it's like someone throwing a Scheherazade down in Magic.
Oh, yeah.
Stop what you're doing, play a whole different game, and come back.
Yep. I mean, at least with... I mean, there are stuff like the Warhammer RPGs don't do that at all. Like, there's no point where it's like, oh, you're a bunch of guys in, like, the Imperial Guard, and if you end up fighting the Tyranids, please stop playing this RPG, put down 2,000 points each of Tyranids and IG, and fight it out that way.
Here's the reason why this is a problem, because they're probably right. They're probably right that the best way to run their miniatures engine, their engine where you fight walkers against other walkers, is the miniatures game that they have already developed.
Yeah.
That's probably true. But when you buy yourself a copy of Gear Krieg, the role-playing game, you're buying it on the strength of this tabletop game that exists, and you're thinking to yourself, oh, cool, finally I can play the dashing, heroic pilots of these cool walkers, and I can live in a world, or I can role-play in a world where these walkers actually exist and interact with them in
or maybe
neat ways.
I'm a rad pilot of the airplane game.
Yeah, you know, Untitled Airplane game. Maybe I'll be a dashing pilot of an Untitled Airplane. Like a Fokker triplane. Wait,
yeah.
That's an actual thing.
Some kind of
Hang
fucker.
On. I can do better than this. Some kind of big fucker.
I'm a big old fucker.
Oh, that reminds me of one of my favorite stories from World War One, where some dude who had survived World War One was like, you've heard it.
Oh, yeah.
The three big Fokkers were coming at us, and
yeah.
They used to get interrupted, and they're like, Fokker is a type of German airplane. And he's like, yeah, but these Fokkers were in Messerschmitts.
Yeah.
So good. Anyway, so... You're really hoping when you go into this, you're like, I want to play with these walkers. Because
yeah.
That's the only thing in this world that's interesting or relevant that separates it from World War II stuff in general.
Yeah, I mean, you could go find yourself a World War II regular simulation game. And,
yeah.
You know, play that instead of this. The reason you're playing this is because you want weird super science.
So when you get the book and you read it, and the super science is boiled down to one laser gun that's way too powerful to let the players have... And three walkers that are way too powerful to let the players have, and Tesla and Edison, there's nothing, it immediately dawns on you, there's no reason for this.
No, there's not a lot going on that really evokes pulp, is the problem that I have with it.
That's a big part too, yeah.
There's no rules for like how villains do certain things like super science. It'll occasionally talk about like, oh yes, you know, Professor Von Evil Guy, and he's got some stuff a brewing, but there's no like suggestions of what that might be or rules on how that might be implemented.
Yeah, there's the bestiary in this book is a literal bestiary.
Oh yeah, it's like actual literal pictures of like a hawk and a dog.
It looks like cutout pictures from Zoo News stickers.
Oh yeah, it's 100% some Zoo News nonsense with stats.
With the wind filter from Photoshop applied once to make it look like it's someone's art, but it's not.
No.
So it's a bunch of clip art of animals and then stats for animals. Like the big thing you needed in this game was stats for goats.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's like, what is this? It's the stat for a turtle. Who cares?
Why,
no one.
What? So it's either giant walkers, Nazi soldiers, or turtles that you can fight, and not even cool mutant turtles who might be ninjas.
Nope, just regular old walking around turtles.
So what are we doing? How come there aren't stats for zombie Nazis? How come the Nazis aren't trying to get the Ark of the Covenant or something?
Yeah, you'd think there would be at least some mention of like, oh, you can run this game with a magical bent. Maybe like Hitler's weird society of dudes looking for artifacts is out there. Or if you want to go like heavily into the super science, say some stuff like, oh, there's a like Wernher von Braun is working on miniature rocket guns or some shit, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Wernher von Braun is trying to put Nazis on the moon.
Yeah, give me something pulpy and interesting, because all it boils down to is a World War II game where there are a couple interesting things that you aren't allowed to play with.
Look, World War II happened the way it always did, but a couple guys had AT-ST walkers, and they were really useful in jungles, apparently, and don't ask any questions about that.
And that's all.
Also, Tesla. Edison and Tesla.
They were around. Like, Edison has his own school of engineers that come up, are supposed to be coming up with, like, super science nonsense, and even then it doesn't have anything.
Yeah, it's just maddening to me that they seem to have figured out that they could just stop after saying Tesla.
Like, they're like, oh yeah, we'll tell you Tesla's doing things, you'll figure it out.
How much cooler would it have been if they had actually super science the shit out of things like Bletchley Park or what Alan Turing was up to in World War II?
That's what I assumed they were going to do when they got to the point where they were talking about England, and I was like, oh, give me that Bletchley Park nonsense.
Yeah, but no, there's just nothing. There's just Tesla has also been here.
I was like, dude, are you going to give me a weird AI that Bletchley Park made, like AI?
They keep mentioning computators.
Yes.
The computers of this time area. They're like, and also there's computators, which are the supercomputers of World War II. Here's the stat on how to use them. Done.
Yep. It's just, oh, if you have a walker without a computator, it's much more complicated to drive.
Is it easier if you have a calm potato?
If you have a calm potato, yes.
Can I drive
a
walker?
If your potato is not freaking out at all, it's great.
Yeah, if I have a calm potato, can I definitely operate a computer more efficiently?
Definitely.
Okay, that's what I needed to
Look,
hear.
Look, everyone at home, if you haven't already, open up your computer, get a potato, talk softly to it, put it inside your computer, reseal it.
Yes, and I guarantee 50 more megs of RAM or whatever.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be some gigahertz.
Some megs of RAM.
Definitely 3 more megs of memory.
I'll guarantee an additional volt of energy power.
There's definitely going to be one more bigs of dark light.
It'll jack up your porkins like you will not believe.
My porkins got all jacked.
X-Wing pilots.
Yeah, so
you'll
there
have
you
Wes Jansons than ever before.
All these Jansons.
Now, if that doesn't work, what you're going to want to do is wedge an Antilles in there.
Thank you. Luke Skywalker.
Luke Skywalker. X-Wing pilots. This has been that sketch.
This has been the X-Wing pilot sketch.
Coming up next, Land of Confusion.
God damn it. I hate you. I knew you were going to say it, and I still hate you.
All right. So you want to get to your favorites and least favorites?
Let's do it.
Okay, let's do that. Let's start with you, John. What is your favorite thing about Gear Krieg, the role-playing game?
My favorite thing in it, God, I want to say that it's the rolling system. If you had a slightly better stat system, mm-hmm. then the actual just like roll and take highest is fine on D6s.
Yeah, it works. It's not exciting, but it works.
No, and I mean, if your base was, say, a +0, and then you had a couple points, instead of the scaling cost, if it was just like, you get however many points to put into your stats, and it's each cost 1 point to go up one, whatever.
Yeah, because the scaling point cost system is basically kind of forcing you onto a bell curve of stats that's not that exciting to look at.
It pretty much means you're going to have one stat at a +2, and that's about it.
Yeah.
Like, no one's going to be super cool.
Yeah, you're not going to have anyone who's super interesting. Like, your team scientist won't have, like, I'm +4 creative. I'm the most creative mind in all of Australia.
Yeah, I mean, I was looking at that going, like, okay, can I make a dude who's super awesome at something? And the problem is, because everything, whether you're like, oh, I'm a two-fisted fighter guy, you're like, yeah, but there's still 4 stats that you need to be good at, And if I decide to be good at one of them, then I'm just going to be mediocre or bad at the other ones.
Yeah, yeah. It's got a real problem of too many stats and too many points required to make those stats any good.
Yeah, which means everyone ends up being essentially the same.
A bunch of zeros and plus ones.
Yeah.
Maybe a minus one here and there because you ran out of points.
Oh, yeah. Or maybe you're like, oh, I'm going to give myself a minus two in this because it's my character arc. Like, oh, I'm a scientist. I have a minus two in my size because I'm just a tiny dude or some shit.
And your reward for doing so is a bonus point to spend.
It's not a good system, but the actual roll and keep highest, that I like. I liked that.
Yeah. But it is a proven system.
No, it's proven. It's proven that you can roll these dice.
They routinely call the system both proven and tried because it also was used in some tabletop miniatures war game that I got to admit I've never heard of.
No, I've never heard of Gierkrieg or the airplane game.
Yeah, well, I've heard of untitled airplane games before, but this is ridiculous.
So that's mine. What is your favorite thing in the book?
I'm going to say my favorite thing in this book is that the skill system at least kind of makes sense. There aren't too many skills, and it does the thing where it says, this isn't all the skills. Feel free to make more up if you need them, or condense these if you think it makes sense to condense them.
Yeah, the skill system, I mean, normally I would have the same way that you would talk about seduction. I would talk about the number of skills.
Yeah.
There's nothing in here that's egregious.
It is a little goofy that they decided to give every skill and every stat its own icon.
Yeah, every stat has an icon, so when you look at a skill, you're like, oh, this has a picture of a man juggling. It goes with the dexterity skill.
You know, it would have been simpler is just putting dex there.
Yeah, but no, they decided that weird little icons is the much better way to go.
When did this come out in relation to, say, the first variation on the iPhone is the question that leaves me with. I have no idea when this book came out because that's research, and it's not even research.
It's in the book.
It's in the book. Let's see. First printing, 2001.
Yeah.
So there you go. Pretty much, right? That's right about when the first iPhone started to hit the market.
Yeah, the symbol thing is just meh.
It's unnecessary. It's just space wasting. No person has ever been like, you know what I think of when I think of hand-to-hand skill is a little person doing archery.
Yeah, because it's all the stats that are next to the skill. So it's like, what's this? It's a picture of a guy with a hat and a diploma. Like, I guess that's knowledge stat?
Nope, it's stick-to-itiveness.
Yeah, there you go.
It's
it's how sticky you are.
Yes, it is literal stick-to-itiveness.
Yeah, I'm Spider-Man.
I've got the highest score in this in the world because I'm Paste Pot Pete.
Paste Pot Pete.
Paste Pot Pete.
Yeah, so there you go.
So there you go. My favorite thing in this system is the skill engine. I thought they did an okay job writing up the skills. It passed the seduction test with flying colors. Good job in 2001.
Good job indeed.
All right, so John, what would you say is your least favorite thing about Gierkrieg?
The lack of pulp. As I was saying before, there's nothing in the book. Like, there's a section in the back that says, like, how do you run this game? How do you do, like, story arcs? How do you do rising action?
That's actually a pretty well-done section. I almost picked that as my favorite part of this book, is that the section on how to run games and write stories was creative and well thought out.
Yeah, and even in that, there's nothing that says this is how you would play something to feel like a pulp adventure. It just, the start of this book is all regular history. Just the history of World War II.
Mm-hmm.
Then it gets into your stats, which make it so you're not really a hero. And the only thing that seems remotely pulpy is stuff like walkers, which the players aren't going to have access to. And like I said, there's just nothing in the book that pushes you towards that. Like, sure, your GM might be like, oh, you show up in Castle Doggenstein, and there's a guy, and he's trying to make super soldiers. You're like, okay, great. But there's nothing in the book that's like, here's stats for super soldiers. Here's a way in which you can make a thing.
Yeah. Like, if you've recently read the Fate-powered Atomic Robo RPG, which I have, this book feels paltry in terms of super science that's on offer.
Yeah, I mean, you have to, like, sort of pick an archetype that they were like, oh, you could be the hero or the sidekick scientist or whatever.
Yeah, those are the classes that you're supposed to play in this game. They're just archetypes. We didn't even talk about the archetype section, so thank goodness I still have my least favorite thing left.
Oh, yeah, but it gets to the archetype for the scientist. It's like, oh, you're a super scientist guy, and you should be able to make crazy nonsense, but there's no rule for it.
Yeah, there's no rule for creating crazy nonsense. There's no examples of crazy nonsense that you could create.
Yeah, so that's my least favorite thing, is that a pulp adventure game does not have pulp or adventure.
So one of the chapters in this book, and this is me going into my own question of what's my least favorite thing in the book.
Indeed.
Is on the difference on how to create villains and the difference between archetypes and stereotypes.
Yes.
The book wisely points out that a stereotype is a negative connotation applied to a specific group of people or a catch-all term. It says something like, you don't want to use stereotypes. You do want to use archetypes. Archetypes are story conventions. And one of the examples they do of this is a story or a villain type called the Kingpin, who's kind of the man behind the scenes, pulling all of the strings and basically being larger than life and living in a big throne inside of a volcano and all that stuff.
Yeah, your average Kingpin.
Yes. Now, they split that into two types, and one of them is like the Grand Vizier or something. The other is the Mandarin. And the Mandarin is described literally as just the Kingpin, but Asian. He should have a bunch of Asian trappings to him, and he should speak with an Asian accent and talk about ancient magical Chinese secrets, and it's not important that he actually be Chinese.
He just needs some Calgon.
Take him away, boys. Now, but the archetype versus stereotype section says, you know, the way you can get away with a character like this is make sure that they're not the only character of that race in the world, because then they're confirming the stereotype. If the only Chinese person you put in your game is constantly waving his arms around in spellcasting and yelling about ancient Chinese secrets and replacing his R's with L's, then you fucked up and you've made a racist caricature in your game.
Yeah, except the problem is, if you do that at all, you done fucked up.
You've done it either way.
Yeah, you put a racist caricature in your game, it's just now you're trying to make up for it by being like, also, there's one of the good ones over there.
You don't get carbon credits for putting like a regular Asian guy with a non-Asian accent in your game.
Yeah.
You don't get, if you were like, and also we brought in that guy from Hawaii 5-0. There he is. Look, say hi, everybody. Hello, I'm also in this movie. Look, Cal Penn is here. We get one of these. We get one of these for free because we put Cal Penn in the movie.
Yeah, we had a nice regular Asian guy, and then we got a sneaky Chinaman. You're like, no, you can't do that.
You can't also...
That's not how this works.
No, it isn't. And here's the thing about that. People are always going to say, well, that's a pulp convention. Your Yellow Peril, your Fu Manchu mustache type guys, those are pulp conventions. Yes, they're bad pulp conventions. You don't need them anymore. You know what a pulp convention of blackface was? Or a convention of blackface was? Being in blackface. It still isn't okay to do it and just say that it's a convention of the genre.
I mean, you can have pulp adventures... That's fine. Just maybe scale that part back a bit.
Just don't bother. You don't need it.
Yeah.
They've managed to make 3 Iron Man movies without the Mandarin looking the way the Mandarin looks in the comic books.
Yep. Boy, I can't wait until Iron Man 4 when they do.
Well, they've already hinted at him actually existing in one of their little one-shot movies.
Yep.
So he's out there somewhere, but somehow they've made it through 10 of those without him swanning in all shirtless and with a... like fist-length mustache and a bunch of rings on,
yeah.
Yelling about dragons.
One of those giant Chinese pope hats.
Yeah. Somehow we've managed to evade that.
Yep.
So you could probably evade that today. Indiana Jones never had that guy. Well, no, he did have a horrible Asian villain at one point, didn't he? God, I feel terrible now. Anyway, that's my least favorite thing in this book. The swing and a miss on how to properly handle archetypes versus stereotypes.
There you go.
John, would you play this game?
I might. It doesn't really interest me. Someone would have to come up to me and be like, yo, I've got a really cool idea for this. Because like I said, the dice rolling mechanic to the game isn't bad, but the actual game itself, like the idea of it, just doesn't tickle my fancy.
Nah. World War II pulp history games. There's plenty of them. Several of them have come out since 2001 that do a better job.
Yeah.
I feel like this thing is in the dustbin of history. We don't need it.
No. Nope.
Like, if people were to come up to me and say, you want to play Gear Krieg, I'd be like, no, but I would be happy to play Atomic Robo or Weird War 2 or any number of other games that are the same thing but done correctly.
Yeah.
So there you go. I think we're both on the... you're on a medium on this one, and I'm saying a no.
Yeah, I'm on the... If someone was really excited about it and it was the only thing they'd play, I'd humor them. It wouldn't be one of those... Because there's plenty of games we've reviewed where even if they came up to me like that, I'd be like, no, man, no. Why?
But I have a great idea.
Nah, man, nah.
Come on, let's play some fantasy wargaming, the highest level of all.
Nah, bruh. Nah.
Look, you can play as a knight of the realm.
Dude. Nah.
No means no.
Nah means nah, bruh.
Nah means nah.
Why don't I have that shirt with my puka shells?
It's got a picture of a squirrel on it, just nodding sagely. He's right. I gnaw often, as I am a squirrel.
Oh, you should have gone with beaver.
Beavers also gnaw. There's two of them. They're back-to-back. They're both doing that arms crossed back-to-back thing like they're coming up next.
Also, there's an explosion behind them, and they're wearing sunglasses.
Coming up next on the CW, it's Beaver and Squirrel. These two are super different, yet somehow they always get the job done.
Rah!
I don't understand you. Why do you always speak in that dumb squirrel language? It's weird that I speak English and you don't. Oh, we are two of a kind.
You.
It's chasing him around.
Come here, squirrel.
Who ate all my nuts? All right, so that horrible aside.
Yep.
There we have it. This is a game that neither of us would especially play. Otherwise, John, you got anything else you want to say about Gear Krieg?
No, just that you should definitely tune in to the bonus content, because we're going to make characters in Gear Krieg.
Lord, are we ever. We're going to be making some Gear Krieg characters for the bonus content that will also release today. If you're not already a member of our Patreon, you should join up. Sign up for the Patreon for any amount of money. Generally, $1 is appropriate.
Generally.
That's right. It's about 20% of what we're worth, right, John?
Yeah.
So you should tip us the amount, about 20% of the total cost of your bill for the podcast, which is about, $5? So, yeah, about $1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, if you were to go up to a bartender and be like, hey, give me a system mastery, he'd be like, that's $5.
That makes sense, because a system mastery is just some circus liquor.
Oh, yeah. It's just, he pours it out of a bottle that says circus on it.
That's our signature drink, the Circus Liquor System Mastery.
Circus liquor.
When you start to turn the bottle sideways, it's all doot, 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 until you turn it right side up again. There's a little chip in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like those birthday cards you open and they start playing the song.
And then you slam it shut immediately because it makes a terrifying, annoying noise.
Yeah.
Well, at least I do, because I'm a hateful old man.
You are. You hate anything. Any new convention.
Any new idea or thing I am immediately against.
Despised.
No, thank you. Wheels on a car? No, sir.
Huh, sir, please.
Woman voters? Pshaw, I say.
I say to thee.
An automobile that moves across the countryside without the aid of a man waving a flag in front? Bullshaw. Flimbabble, I tells you.
Flimbabble.
Flimbabble. You heard me.
I've got my character.
What happened to Gear Keith?
Nah, you can play Gear Keith.
I'm going to play Gear Craig.
Gear Craig and Flimbabble coming to you.
So we're going to be making some characters for our Patreon. If you support us at any level whatsoever, you get access to that bonus content, plus access to our feed over there. The RSS feed on that side is everything, including the bonus content, all in one convenient location.
Yep, super convenient.
Good RSS feed. So, otherwise, thank you so much for listening. You can find us to ask us your questions or send us your recommendations at systemmasterypodcast.com, patreon.com/systemmastery, or systemmastery at your choice of Facebook, Reddit, Gmail, Twitter, Tumblr, Pinterest. Let's see. I think we've got a LinkedIn account at this point.
Do you know System Mastery?
Everyone has a LinkedIn account, right? So
yeah, obviously.
Three people Googled for System Mastery on LinkedIn today.
Just know we aren't on Google Plus. That shit's over.
We are on Google
Plus. I mean, technically we are.
Can't avoid it because we have a Gmail account.
Yeah.
But please, we never find out if you're talking about us in there because that shit is garbage.
Yeah. Straight up garbage.
It's just trash. It's just trash in a pile.
Just a big trash pile.
Otherwise, thank you so much for listening. And have a good week.